Hello, everybody. Stu Smith here, along with Jeff Nichols, doing another Tactical Fitness Report. This is our fourth one of a series. That the first three that we started off with was training to get to the training, which is basically a fitness test. However, you can't stop there. You know, just because you ace a fitness test doesn't mean you're going to make it through whatever your selection is. So the next phase is getting through the training, and you got to go to a little more specifics. And the third one is active duty training, which we discussed last time. And now we're talking about what do you do when you get out of spec war, whether that is fitness related or it is career related. We talked a little bit about both of those things because we have some great examples of guys doing great things. Jeff, good to see you again.
Glad to be here.
Yeah. So let's do that. Oh, by the way, all these things that we are discussing, look in our description below. You'll be able to link up with Jeff on his YouTube channel, his social media channel, which is really good. It's The Only Easy Day. That's one of them. And then short Jeff CSCS. That Only Easy Day is awesome. I mean, if you want to see some cool spec war picks, you know, that they're professionally done and they're fantastic. So take a look at that. You'll see that in the description, be able to find out, you know, where Jeff is, and he moderates that, and he can answer a lot of your, you know, fitness buds questions as well. So now we're going to talk about what do you do when you get out? So typically the average frog man that gets out, you know, not everybody retires after 20. It's quite incredible seeing somebody do that. A lot of guys get out, you know, within 8 to 10 year mark, you know, sometimes a little bit less. So Jeff, how were you when you got out? What was, like your physical condition when you were getting out and transitioning?
I think for a lot of us I spent 11 years in, and call it good timing or bad, my 11 years spent in that 10 year block at the end, the day I joined the Navy, I deployed a year to the day. So I came in October 1st, deployed for the first time October 1st, exactly a year later. And I never, the upcoming years following, there's very few years where I didn't deploy. The only time I didn't deploy within that timeline was going through selection here in Virginia Beach. That was the only kind of that year timeline. But in a calendar year, I still deployed. My point is that I was busy. I was really fortunately busy because I think, you and I have talked about before, guys have, you know, previous to us spent 20 years in the community and never once deployed in a combat setting to no fault of their own.
Oh, yeah. And it just happens.
It's just timing and those sort of things. For me, the timing when I came in post 9/11, I was in the right place at the right time or wrong place. But depending on your perspective, that's where I was at. So after the years of deploying and training, pretty beat up, far more fortunate than many. And with my background as an exercise physiologist before I came in, I had this, I think I had a fairly unique perspective on myself and maybe the community a little bit, thinking, well, we could do a little bit better as a whole and continue to educate. And that progress has really, really been made over the years. But upon my exit, it took me a minute to get my feet and my bearings down, because for many of us, I think that we're so positively focused on the job that we enjoy and we're passionate about and the people we love and appreciate in the community. It's not that you're removed from that, because you can still reach in that community and communicate with them, but it's no longer my job to be privy to certain information. Yeah. To protect those people. So I'm aware of what goes on, but it's not none of my business, really. But for my transition, it took me a minute to get my feet under me. But again, fortunately for me, that's why you and I've talked a number of times about, hey, just finish, if you're in college, finish school. Like, you're not wasting time by maturing and educating yourself. Now, if someone's ready at high school and they want to do it, that's not me trying to deter them. But because I had my formal education, at that point, I had finished my bachelor's degree and my grad school work, and it was really easy for me kind of to make that transition right back into something that I was passionate about. So I think my transition from a social standpoint was a little bit easier than some because I didn't have to go back to school or anything. But physically, I had a road ahead of me. And it's not at all to say that the active duty side wasn't taking care of me. Let me be really clear about that. The medical care that I was provided for me at the command I was at, the community, it was first rate.
Sure.
It's just that our mentality of that just go, 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 go. I was breaking myself, as many do, at a rate far quicker than they could put me back together. And when I got out, I was still pretty aggressively training, and it took me a minute to, it was born out of necessity. I had to slow down a little bit or get smarter. I finally started applying some of my principles as a whole, not just kind of the ones I choose to, but as a whole. And now I feel so much better for it. I feel a whole lot better for it physically.
Now, how many years has that been since you've been out?
It's I'm 3 years and.
Okay. Wow.
Three and a half years now.
Okay. That's good.
So I'm pretty good. Now on the business side, that was a whole other learning curve for me. And it still is. It's at that. I had this conversation last night with someone close to me. Like, being passionate about something is easy. And especially, like, it really, really makes sense to me training people and training with people and understanding it really, because it's very objective, like mathematics makes a lot of sense to me. Business and people are very amoebous, and it doesn't make a lot of sense to me because I can't control them. Not in a bad way, but I think that's what you're going to find a lot of people struggle with, in my opinion, is the military really gives you this really good sort of cleaned up routine. And when you leave it, it can drive people. I always tell people, nobody really worked at the pace that my mind works outside in the civilian world. Except for other team guys, yeah. And other military veterans. It seems like that they get it. There's a sense of urgency that we all work under. And a lot of that, not for good or bad, it's just different. You know, it's nothing against civilian life. It's just, that was for me the big adjustment, is adjusting to that pace, the slower pace.
Yeah, that's a good point, because the transition is odd. I remember making that transition too, somewhat broken as well, and had to resort back to, you know, some of my initial training that I've ever done. And like I think we discussed it a little bit, you know, about going back to isolation exercises and really physical therapy style for almost a year. Of just a physical therapy style workout where it was a rebuilding, it was relaxing, yeah. And I had to do it because it was just, like I said, things were falling apart. And I was only 28 years old. You know, that's the odd thing about it. Now, that's not everybody. I mean, there are people that are far more durable than I am that are staying in and doing amazing things into their late 30s and early 40s. But that's not necessarily the most common, you know, spec war guy, you know, right. It's like we all get banged up. And I just remember one of the reasons why I got out was because I was kind of banged up, and I truly didn't feel like I was going to be a good operator in the future. You know, I just felt like things were falling apart to a point where I just didn't think I was, you know, it was a horrible feeling. You know, yeah. It was a horrible feeling making that realization. And then, you know, other things occur. You know, we have a daughter that was born that year. You know, wife had a miscarriage a year later, you know, so it was a whole lot of things that just kind of was the perfect storm for leaving. And it was before 9/11. People were, I mean, the Navy was paying people to get out of the Navy, you know, and which was crazy.
Right.
Because, you know, 2 years later, it just went happened. So, but anyway, that was my story. I've got a lot of other buddies, and you do too, that have gone out of the Navy and other spec war jobs and have done phenomenal things, whether it is, you know, build their own business as entrepreneurs, you know, variety of stuff. A lot tend to get into the tactical profession, you know, tactical world, which is great. You know, they figure out a niche and, you know, able to do things like that. Got some guys that are, you know, doctors, physical assistant or physician's assistants, nursing, anybody, you know, a lot of corpsmen tend to move that way. I see a lot of spec ops corpsmen really get involved with, you know, do it. I have another guy, another buddy of mine who was an 18 Delta corpsman that created a business around, you know, TCCC, and, you know, teaches law enforcement and firefighters, you know, TCCC, you know, which is, you know, combat casualty care, which, you know, saving a lot of lives right now. I mean, if you if we didn't know that, you know, just preventing people from bleeding out, number one lifesaver, you know, in the tactical world, whether you're local here with people getting shot or stabbed, or it's, you know, overseas, you know, doing the same things.
Right.
You know, that's great. We even have a new astronaut going into the astronaut program. He's one of your classmates, wasn't he?
He was the Butts class prior or after.
Okay.
He's lumped in there because I think he's the Butts class after. The photos from the Only Easy Day that Richard took, the officers from my Butts class ended up in the afterward, you know, the Butts class after when they go SQT, right?
Because that's
they go to all the JO courses and they jump in with the next. So he was with that class quite a bit as well. And also some of the guys from my Buds class that got hurt or rolled in the second. So that's why there's actually two classes in that, that book. But, yeah, I recall him. I can't say that I remember him though.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it's the same timeline.
Yeah. It's a crazy story. I mean, he was a combat vet or a combat medic, went on to, go to med school. I think it went to med school, Harvard med school, which, you know, that alone is,
you can't just get into Harvard, right?
Phenomenal.
Let alone med school.
Yeah. And then, you know, now he's going to be an astronaut. So Navy SEAL, Harvard med school, astronaut, you know, those are the type of things that, that can happen, you know, when you leave this place, because you do leave the community, you know, if you leave the community in the right mindset, regardless of why you're leaving or how you're leaving, you should know that you could put your mind and do anything you want to do.
Yes.
If you really want to do it, that's one of the unique things. I mean, I think that's why, you know, that's why people make it through SEAL training, is because they believe that long before they were SEALs.
For sure.
You know, and it's just one of those things. I know it just in my class alone. And like that time, that era, 1990, 91, I know of at least five doctors now, you know, that the guys became doctors and they're still in the Navy doing great stuff. I think there may even be one over, you know, like a surgeon within Spec War, you know, at the command, and, really does, you know, I mean, that's just phenomenal that they're able to still be in the community, but also go after, you know, one of their other passions, which is, you know, medicine.
For sure.
Yeah. So well, how about this? Let's do this. This is kind of a fun conversation to have about, what is your go-to workout now that you're the, you know, former Navy SEAL fitness guy? Yeah. what is it that you like to do? What is your, like, when you have nothing to do and you know you're going to go work out, what is your go-to favorite workout you're going to do?
Yeah, I think, it's depending on my mood, but generally speaking, for me, I'm a big believer in back strength. Like, I think for me, because of the lower back pain, and there's the back pain, the hip and neck discomfort, and all the years of being wearing body armor, for me, if my back is strong and functioning the way it needs to be, it tends to alleviate a lot of my other discomforts. So not just compression of the back. Like, I do enjoy a deadlift a lot. I really do, and various sort of movements associated with that deadlift. But I do a lot of pull-ups. It seems to me the older I get, I don't feel old, but the older I get, the more seems like I get positive stimulus from body weight movements. Like, I like suspension trainers. I like doing pull-ups. I like doing deadlifts. I like doing a lot of band work. All of our equipment here has is Sornex equipment, and we have, you know, we can add band attachments to all the implements. So that for me is, I, you know, without kind of targeting it, but what I do like to do still is, if I can explain it properly, I guess, I like to lift as heavy as possible without lifting heavy.
Oh, okay.
You want, I want to find that, you know, for me, I have the percentages in my head of where I feel like I get the most work volume.
Sure.
Somewhere between 70 and 80%, or I might use a body weight, like if I'm going to do curls or something, I'm not going to do heavy. Right. But I want to, I also don't want to be curling a PVC pipe or skin. I have all the numbers in my head of what I do, but it's for a lot of people, they're surprised. And it, you probably, there's a lot of people I run come across that's, they don't, like, I like to lift heavy in comparison to my capability. I don't do it all the time because it's too much wear on me from the past, or just as I'm getting a little bit older, but I like to lift heavy weights in proportion to what I do, but not ever sacrificing my movement principles. That pain shows up right away. If I'm out of position, pain shows up right away. And it's a good quick reminder that I'm doing it wrong.
Okay.
So I rarely get outside of that comfort zone. Like, it's not that I don't want to squat this and bench this and heavy weights, you know, but I don't do it that often. Some days it will hit me. I'm like, you know, I think I lifted over X weight one time. Like I pulled 630.
Woo.
And it felt good, but I'd only done that once in 3 years. I hadn't really gone over what I thought was my capability for a long time. For the whole last year, off blocks and 6-inch blocks, I didn't pull more than, I think, 405, but I just do reps, really clean clustered reps. And then it's like one day I was like, well, heck, I feel really good. And so I did it, and I'm like, wow, I surprised myself. I just wanted to pull over 5, and then I'm pulling 630.
Nice.
I do that once. Do I have any plans to do that? No.
Right.
Same with the squatting and the benching, because I don't ever do it that heavy. The long answer to your short question is, I like to lift back a lot. Like, that's, I'm fresh and ready, I'll pull a lot. The next switch is, like, about 14 months ago, I stopped allotting time for my day, for my workout, for my training. What I've done now instead of the last 14 months is the 4 o'clock group, the guys that are going to Buds and Spec War. The program that I've written for them, I do it with them.
Oh, that's nice. That's what I do too.
And
yeah,
I feel great.
Yeah.
You know, I get it, but it's really nice because it allows me, probably just like you, if I push them real hard appropriately. I know that they're younger than me. They're all 10 years younger than me. Some are even younger.
Yeah.
When I'm tired, I know that they've got to be getting close.
Yes, exactly. So
I use myself as a litmus.
Yep.
And just kind of like wing it, because I can still do 35 pull-ups. I can still do 160 push-ups. I can sit-ups. I don't do a whole lot. I can do them. I can still swim like a fish, and my running isn't great, but I still do sprint work with them.
Yeah.
So for me, it's really important that I still am saying, not just saying do this, but I'm still displaying the capability, and I care enough to do it with them. That's my perspective.
Yeah.
And it's been really good for me. It's been really, really good for me to do that with them.
You know, I do the exact same thing, and I've been doing it for almost 15 years with a local group here. And I think I'm 10 years older than you. I'm 48 this year.
Yeah, I'm 38.
So, yeah. So, and I'm feeling it probably about the same as you. You know, the long runs, you know, I'm not beating people on that one. However, this last week I did. I beat two people in my group, which I was so excited to beat two people. You know, I was happy that I did, but at the same time I had to say, look, there's no reason why I should be beating you. You need to work on your running.
And that's the point. That's a great teaching point for so many people, because also showing a little bit of humility. And for me, you know, there are some guys that come and they get stressed out, they get acclimated to it, and then all of a sudden you see their strength improve a ton for a lot of reasons. And for me, it's like the joke is there's one other guy that's in the class with that shows up every day. He was a former strength coach at NC State.
Oh, nice.
CT. And he's 27. And he's kind of got that. I always say, I always joke, like, when you start getting 26, 27, you can start getting that old man strength. And I'm past 36, and I just – but it just goes to show that, I guess, the point of all of it is that this is, you know, getting stronger, staying fit, and all this sort of thing. It's not literally, but it's a marathon.
Yes.
No reason why we can't be 60 and still really put in quality work, right? You know, 65 even maybe even the 70s if we're fortunate enough and we don't have too many catastrophic injuries. But like, I really, really am looking forward to aging and still being able to do the things that I think I should be able to do.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. You know, I will say this, my favorite go-to workouts are kind of cyclical. So I tend to spring and summer tend to do a lot more calisthenics, running and swimming. You know, I throw in some weights every now and then. Just, I like the doing the deadlifts as well. We kind of go light. My main reason for doing deadlifts is very similar to yours. I don't do 600 pounds, but I will say that you almost have to keep that synapse going.
Yes.
Of picking up stuff properly.
Yes.
You know, because
That's the home run right there.
Yeah, because when I'm moving stuff around the house or picking up something from my car and taking it to my house, whatever it is, you know, if you have been used to deadlifting, you will do that properly.
Yes.
Right? And if you can't –
that's the thing is, you know, deadlifting is a movement. We call it an exercise, but you're exactly right. I can bend over to pick something up without a lot of fear of hurting my back because I've trained myself to load my back in a economical way.
Right.
So it's like picking up a golf ball where you see people with a straight leg and they bend over to pick it up. That's by design. So they lever appropriately to pick the ball up, right? It's a trained thing within golf. Inherently, you know, I want to pick something up heavy. I'm going to squat to get it instead of bend over. But,
right.
You know, the whole phrase use it or lose it is super true. Extremely true with the deadlift.
Yes. Yeah. So that like pull-ups, we'll do pull-ups year round just because I've always considered pull-ups being the heavyweight exercise of calisthenics.
Yes.
Between that and dips, yep. You know, tend to like those and do those year round. However, in the fall and winter, that's when I really start focusing on weightlifting cycles and do a lot more 5x5s, 2-pop workouts where I just go 2-2-2-2-2 and just, you know, try to see how high I can go up without hurting myself.
For sure.
And yeah, I usually, like you, try to keep it, you know, 1 or 2 reps in the hole, you know?
Yep.
So like if I know I got like 1 rep left, I'll stop it there.
For sure.
You know, just because, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, break any records, you know, anymore, you know, but I will say this, I went through a great heavy lifting cycle. Oops, my camera dropped. Went through a great heavy lifting cycle 2 years ago, or 18 months ago. And we just had a whole lot of football players that were in the group and these power lifters and everybody was getting crazy heavy. And we all got strong and, you know, it was just right off of running and PT cycle. So we were all ready to like, let's drop the mileage and go lift. And so we started our lift cycle. And everybody got strong. I got strong. I haven't been this strong in probably 20 years. You know, big numbers on deadlifts, squats. I mean, nothing crazy, like 450, almost hit 5 on the deadlift. Never done 5 on the deadlift, just barely. You know, yeah. And then, but I always like hang cleans.
Yeah.
You know, power cleans. Those are like classic power lifts I've been doing since I was a teenager.
For sure.
And bench press. I love bench press. Yeah, that's probably right. What keeps me in the weight room.
Well, that's the thing, too, is that there's this misconception that the bench press is primarily a chest exercise building. It is, but if you really are stable on a bench press, it's a back exercise equally.
Yeah.
And I didn't know this. Like, I had separated this from my left shoulder twice and this one once.
Same.
I just pretty much gave up bench pressing. And I met a guy named Greg Panora who has since now, in his lifetime, he was a West Side guy. He held at one point the world record two different times on bench press. And I was teaching at a conference in California he was also at, and we sat down and talked, and we worked through some things, and it was these little tweaks that I was like, I'd all but given up on that. And he was like, you're just using too much chest and triceps. Like, those are your strengths. He's like, your back needs to be strong, really strong in the bench press. And he put me in the positions, he talked me through it, and I was like, light bulb. And I'm like, I cannot believe that I wasn't aware, like, you know, it wasn't even that I wasn't trying to be stable in these sort of things, but now that I started realizing, like, my ability, you know, I want to take, like, you know, we can jump up and down, a healthy person can, because of our stretch reflex, right? That elastic energy that's built up. We can do that same thing in our shoulder girdle and our elbows or through our triceps and all those sort of things.
Yeah.
You can teach that stretch reflex in a push up. All of a sudden, you know, I did that with a couple guys, and their push up goes from 80 to 130.
Nice. Not
really even, you know, but you walk that fine line of too much trauma, like plyometrics, right? You don't want to do it all the time.
Sure.
But that's the thing, is if we're teaching for the test, right, the PST, where it's like ready, set, go, and they're just hammering them out, we're not just talking about getting stronger, right, specifically the word strength. We're also looking at, like, I want to make you safe and dynamic, which is why Olympic weightlifting is super valuable, right? It teaches, and that's what Friday for us right now, we're in a skill acquisition phase with our group, where Friday is, we're teaching the clean, the hang clean, and the jerk.
Nice.
Because it's a good, really good neurological stimulation. It's people are engaged, which is why, you know, like CrossFit and other things have been so successful, in my opinion, is because the movements they're doing are challenging, they're exciting. And if we take that and dial that in a little bit, and really with the right group of people, we can be kind of parochial, but they learn something and they still get the work put in and they become dynamic and more powerful. It transfers into the push-ups, the pull-ups, the sit-ups, the running and the swimming.
Yep. And it's great preparation for boats and logs.
Absolutely it is.
You know, especially I teach everybody, you know, when you've got a log right here and you want to get it to here, it's not a military press. It is a push press.
It is a butt squeeze and push press.
And you can push press. I don't want to say all day, but it's a lot easier than doing this.
Yeah.
You know,
it certainly is.
Yeah. When you teach your team, you know, under that log, how to do the push press together, one, it's a great teamwork movement.
Yep.
You know, so which you're going to live and die under that log as a team.
Agreed.
You know, and if you can learn to do that push press together, it makes log PT, I don't want to say easier, because log PT is never easy. Yeah, I mean, I remember, you know, like I said, you and I come from the same kind of background. As I remember doing log PT and, you know, being beat up after it, but remember saying, I felt like a weight room workout.
Yeah.
You know, and I hadn't had one in a while because I've been focusing on cardio and PT for so long. You know, so
I enjoyed, for lack of a better term, it got to the point where, like, log PT never really got enjoyable.
Yeah.
But you know, when we were out on Bud's Beach and it was pull-ups and ropes and push-ups and dips, like, I tried my best to not let anyone know that I was enjoying myself. This is not difficult at all. Right. And it was allowed, but it was difficult in a positive way. Like, okay, I'm really
it's a good workout.
Volumizing my muscles. I know I'm getting the nutrients, so I need to. In my head, I'm thinking, okay, after this, we're going to go eat. Like, make sure I'm going to go eat. So, because I know I have O course that afternoon or something.
Right,
but it's those moments where if you can be the king of your world for a day, for an hour at Bud's, do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's really like it wasn't a gut check. You know what I mean? You go through a gut check every day at Bud's, whether it's just discomfort or it's you're exhausted, you know, or it's an event that you're not very good at.
Right.
You know, or I should say you're not great at.
Right.
You know, for me, it was running. You know, every run that we did was a little personal gut check that I had to stay in that pack so I wouldn't get gooned, or, you know, I had to stay in to try to just break that top 50% of the class in running.
Yeah.
You know, everything else for me, I was like you. I was very similar. I was like, PT all day. You know, love that. Let me get back to something I was mentioning earlier, is that I was, you know, stronger this 2 years, about 18 months ago than I was 20 years ago. But here's the rub, right? I got bigger than I have ever been in my life at 225. So I'm 6 feet, 225. And that's the most I've ever weighed in my life. And let me tell you, I thought I was doing pretty well. I was like, man, I'm getting pretty big. I feel pretty strong. Everything was good. Nothing hurt. But then I go to the doctor, and then all my numbers are off for the first year ever, right? Cholesterol, triglycerides, you know, blood pressure. And I'm just like, oh, crap. You know? So, and then I say, all right, well, I'm going to make a constant point, because we're starting to get springtime again, and we started running, and that was a hard transition.
Yeah,
you know, it felt like I was running with a ruck on.
Yeah,
you know, when we started running, and it was a slow progression. It wasn't anything crazy. We didn't jump right into 5-6 mile runs. It was, you know, the first mile of every run that we did, my body would just yelled at me the whole time, and it was brutal. So it has taken me almost 18 months to lose 20 pounds. Right, I tried it, like, let me see if I can outwork my diet a little bit before I really focus on my diet. Yep. That didn't work.
Yeah.
And then, so now it's a real hard focus on diet and carb intake, and, you know, still eating good carbs, but really anything that's crap, you just can't eat it. You know?
Our sports dietitian here, she is very famous for saying you can't out train your fork. And that's, you get to a point now that is not going to, that will hold very, that statement can be trumped at Bud's.
Yes.
Certainly.
Yes.
Will not out eat Bud's.
Right. Yeah, I would agree. To gain weight at Bud's is near impossible.
You're not going to, as long as you're staying there, right?
Right.
7 weeks of actual Bud's, eat everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you drive by a place that sells good milkshakes, go get yourself a big milkshake too.
With the huge giant Pizza King down in Imperial Beach, the big 44-inch pizza, right? The closest Chipotle at the time I was in Bud's was in La Jolla, and that's, hell, that's a 35-minute drive one way.
Yeah, but you got to go to Jalisco's.
Yeah,
and IB. That was the place.
Yeah. Woo. Still there. Yeah, that's down there.
I think they still have the same prices for back when I was there. You pay like $8 and you roll out of
everything.
There.
Yeah.
So much food.
Yeah, no, I think that, I mean, that's always the struggle when we get out, is kind of what we're going to do for some, because I don't like to use the word institutionalized for our group of people. I tell people is, you know, the passion that we have for being a SEAL and what got us, propelled us, our emotions and our energy going through Bud's. If we can take that, find something we're passionate about and apply that in our civilian world, we're going to be successful. Like, there are very few team guys, former team guys, that after being out of the community for a year or two, in their own way, right? We're not measuring against finances or whatever, but when you talk to them, they go, man, I'm doing this and I'm happy and I'm successful. Whatever their measurement of success is. And that for me has been one of my mentors and people getting out. And I saw enough, you know, retired this or guys have gotten out. I'm going, hey, if you come out, don't think the world's going to give anything to you, because it certainly isn't.
True.
If you find something, and I mean this in a positive way, attack it with the same sort of fervent mentality as you did the community, you're just gonna run into success everywhere you go.
Absolutely.
And I think that what you said is, you know, there's a part of us that who we are, that's who we are when we came to Bud's. The community does such a wonderful job of fostering that sense of success, that when we get out, we're just like, we've got all these weapons, no pun intended, of what I want to do. Like, if I'm going to go back to school, I'm going to go back to Harvard Medical School. Right. If I'm going to go into the work in the world of apparel, I'm going to just do it. Right. Tons of veteran apparel and companies and, you know, supplements and energy drinks and the business. I know people in Northwestern Mutual and all these worlds that you're just like, man, the community gave us an awful lot. And I believe that it is upon us, it's very incumbent upon us to continue that tradition, that success, even when we get out. Like, we're still representatives of our community, and I feel that I owe it to our community to continue to be ambassadors for our community, even if we're not SEALs. I think that's very
important. Oh, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I've always said, I've told my wife this all the time, I have to be able to go into a room of active duty or former SEALs and, hold my head up high and people say, hey, good job. I don't necessarily need that accolade, but at the same time, I don't want to be the guy that, you're bringing discredit to the community.
Agreed. Agreed. That means a lot to me as well. And a former Master Chief, retired friend of mine, Pete Naschek, said to me once, he said, he didn't say it. I was in the conversation. He was having a conversation with Marcus Luttrell. And Marcus was very torn. I'm sure he won't mind me telling the story. He was very torn when he got to the point where the Navy's like, hey, we're going to have you retire medically. Like, you're just, the body is failing, right? And he was pretty busted up about it. Rightly so, pouring his heart into the community. And Pete Naschek was our Master Chief at the time of Team 5. And he said to Marcus, he goes, listen, he goes, just know that if you really want to make a difference in the community, like, it's not going to end when you get out. He goes, if you really want to make a difference for our veterans community, he goes, you will have every opportunity to do that when you get out.
Yeah.
I remember being privy to that conversation in Ramadi, Iraq. And now, still being friends with Pete and having a conversation, seeing how successful he's been and been a mentor to me. And I look at it and I go, with what you and I and many of us are doing, still helping, still serving in our own way. Like, I feel like I'm in a place to do a lot of good. And that is really an awesome place to be. And for guys that are coming in the community, that's an awesome, they may not even be, perceive that idea, but when they, even those guys, like you said, we're still going to serve in our own way.
Right.
And I think that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I'll tell you, there's two off the top of my head that are also in the fitness invention industry. Randy Petrick for the TRX, which, genius invention. Guy created it from, parachute straps or, well, it was probably tubular and nylon.
Tubular and some stuff, yeah.
And now he's got a great program, and there's probably a million videos of people using his product online, and it's just, it's phenomenal. And it's revolutionized, fitness, adding a suspension training genre to the masses, which is phenomenal. He also does great work with veterans programs, too.
He does, yeah.
In fact, I just wrote an article about his involvement with a program called Boulder Crest Retreat outside of DC, a little bit west of DC, and phenomenal place. And everybody that goes there gets a TRX to take home with them. And they really help them out, just to put fitness back into their life, and that's,
for sure.
That's a nice thing to be a part of. And, but anyway, another classmate of mine, Alden Mills, created the Perfect Push-Up.
That's right.
Perfect Push-Up. He sold millions of those things. Oh, my God.
I think it's something. Yeah.
Man, he did a great thing. And, so anyway, there's so many other great stories of, former military guys doing great things outside the military and still representing. So, so what do you want to talk about next?
I think we should talk about kind of what we talked about more, some of the myths.
Oh, I love it.
Might be a good idea. Not in a sense of like, well, so-and-so's wrong, nothing like that, but just, I had a question. I think one of the big topics I think we should talk about regarding is like achieving a certain level of mental toughness.
Okay.
What does that really mean? And I think that I'll save my thoughts.
Yeah.
Because I had really, really great advice, not even in context of mental toughness, that was given to me about that. And that's typically what I tell people. So also, but I think that's one of the big things we start with is like, all right, guys, do I take cold showers? And I saw the article you just, like, I think that would be a really good topic. Maybe we pick four or five things that people, like, how you have to hold your breath for 6 minutes. You have to take cold, all these sort of things that you're like, okay,
right. Okay.
We're not giving the keys to the city because, like we said, we could have the playbook in front of us and give you every day of buds, and it still wouldn't help anybody get through.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I like that. I think that'd be good. You know, some of the rumors, some of the myths, some of the things that – one thing I hate is seeing people kill themselves because they're practicing underwater swims by themselves.
Yeah.
And it's a test that truly no one failed in my buds class.
Me neither. Yeah.
You know, and it's something that, you know, you're going to fail 4-mile timed runs before you fail an underwater –
Right. There's a reason why, I guess we're kind of getting, there's a reason why when we do the underwater breath holding and buds that you have an ambulance there. There's a reason. And all the corpsmen and mud are there, and all the officers, like there's a, you know, it can be dangerous, but no one in my buds class failed.
Yeah.
So I think some of those topics should be, because the point is that we're talking about optimizing all your training in preparation for it. So we're better off training on, you know, the PST and some other mechanics other than worrying about the breath hold. Because if you have the aerobic capacity to run a 9-minute mile and a half, you have the aerobic capacity to hold your breath for 30 seconds.
Yes. Yeah, I love it. So I think that's a good commercial for our next discussion.
Deal.
So that'll be it. So we'll talk about that. You guys check out the description down below. You see all the links to Jeff, and whether it's social media, website, his gym down in Virginia Beach, and then you know, his Facebook page and all that stuff. So, and his YouTube channel.
Awesome.
So, all right, man. Good to talk to you again. I'll get this to you, and we'll keep rolling.
Sounds good. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.